Welcome to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. I'm Beatrice Chestnut.
And I'm Urano Pais.
Today, we are talking about the Enneagram perspective on parenting.
Great.
So, what would you like to say by way of introduction to this topic of looking at parenting, parents and children with through an Enneagram lens?
We've just done this very interesting, nice online workshop about parenting, about kids of all types and parents of all types, styles of learning. I really loved doing it. I believe you did too. And I learned a lot because we also had panelists of each type. So it was a great opportunity that we did on CP Enneagram. It's, by the way, it's available on the website for whoever is interested. But what really caught my attention was to see how parents did not do the right thing with the kid of that type. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about what parents need to know. I think everyone wants to be a good parent. They want to do the best job they can in relating to their child. And I do think we learned a lot about, and again, we looked at both the parents and the child of that type. So for each type, looking at what does this child need? Because I think good parenting is about a few things. One is being a good model. Knowing what kinds of things you want your child to learn just from watching you. Another thing is how self-aware you are as a parent, you know, how able you are to understand your own patterns, your own reactivity, and to manage your reactivity and to manage the way you relate to other people. And then I think another one is just what are the natural strengths you bring to the job and what are the challenges that you might have yourself as a parent, but also in then being open to understanding what your specific child needs. And of course, the Enneagram is great because it gives us these really clear windows into 9 different styles, whether it's just a person or a parent or a child.
Yes, and I guess we need to talk a little bit in this beginning about typing a child. It's very difficult to type in general, and sometimes even more difficult to type a child. We notice that many kids manifest the best of that type, like they're closer to essence, and also they manifest the arrow points. The Enneagram has this diagram, and each type is connected to 2 other points with inner lines in the symbol that we call arrows. And many kids manifest, especially the arrow against. But having said that, I know that you and I believe that it is actually possible to know a child's type from very early. Now, we need to be careful, though, especially when we don't have the necessary background in typing. What would you like to say about that, Bea?
Yeah, I do think that a lot of people who are listening to this are probably asking themselves a few questions about this. One is, you know, how does our type arise? Do we come in with it? Is it something that gets developed in childhood through the way we interact with our environment? And like you're saying, is it wise to type my child? How early can I know my child's type? Should I try to figure out my child's type or should I wait till later? I think there's a lot of questions that may arise for people in thinking about this topic. What our sense is that we are born with our type. Certainly in childhood, the way we interact with the people in our world affects us a lot and also shapes us. But I don't think that early experience determines our type or even our subtype or our dominant instinct. But I do think that we can look back at our life and see the way that our lived experience as a child fit with what our type was, how our survival strategy worked in our family or how we got treated a certain way. And so I do think that we come in as a type, but then it's kind of a dance between the way we express our type and the way we get treated. And it's often both. We're shaped by our environment, especially in terms of how rigid our defenses need to be or how fixated our personality type becomes. And in terms of the wisdom of typing kids, I definitely think it's good not to focus too much on trying to figure it out. You know, I don't have children, but I have a niece and nephew I'm very close to. And at least with my nephew, I saw it so early what type and subtype I thought he was. Now, I do think it's really important not to put that on children. And of course, we talk about how we don't push the Enneagram on children, of course. Sometimes they come to us with it or they get interested. And when they express interest, that's a good time to talk about it with them. But I think you can, in some cases, tell what type your child is pretty early. In other cases, it just takes a while longer. And I think the main thing is not to get too focused on needing to find an answer, but just get to know your child as they are and see what happens. At the beginning of our course, we cited a book by Daniel Siegel, Parenting from the Inside Out. In his book, Dan Siegel cites a very compelling piece of evidence that motivated him to write the book, which is there's data, of course, about what parents can do that lead to successful outcomes for their children. And there was one finding that was more robust than anything else, one variable, one thing that parents can do that had a really big positive impact on their children. And he found it very interesting. And what it was the parents' ability to narrate their own personal story. And so I think what that points to is the more self-aware the parent is, the better they are going to be at managing their own emotions, thoughts, behaviors. And I think when you're able to really be self-aware, you are also able to move your own reactivity and your own personality patterns out of your kid's way. In other words, you can really see what's yours and what's theirs. If you're quick to anger, sometimes we might be tempted to blame that on the person who inspired our anger. But if you know, because it's connected to your personality, that you tend to be quick to anger, it's going to be easier to own that and easier to see your child in a clear way. In other words, we get our own reactions out of the way so that we can make more space to see and understand what our children really need from us.
Yes, and I think that parenting is something that many times bring the best in us, but also make us feel having our bottoms pushed and we react a lot and it's tiring. And each type deals with that in different ways. So it's a great way to know reactivity patterns. Now, it's also so interesting to learn about the nine types by seeing how the nine types of kids are. It was pretty fun to teach that and see that, wasn't it, B? And we did have kids of all nine types at the workshop talking to us about how it is to be a kid of that type.
Yes, for each class, we had a panel of experts. We had three people of that type, the type we were focusing on in the class that day. We had a parent of that type. We had a young adult of that type, with the idea that young adults are closer to childhood, but also young adults who know their Enneagram type can speak pretty clearly about what they felt supported by and what was challenging for them growing up. And then we had a younger child, usually between 12 and 17, to talk about what their experience was and what really helped them and what it was hard for them in their experience. And I think getting those testimonials from, you know, getting that input from those three people was really invaluable in terms of getting the full picture of what it's like to be a parent of that type. What are the natural strengths and what are the pain points and the challenges that just naturally arise in doing the sometimes difficult job of parenting, and what's it like to be a child of that type? And so I think those two different angles gave us a lot of interesting information about not only parenting, but also family dynamics and what it's like to grow up as a specific child. So I think we learned, like you said, we learned a lot while we were also teaching this course.
Yeah, and it's also especially useful to discuss all this in the context of helping the kid be in the right agenda for their age. Meaning that sometimes kids tend to grow up too fast and to become premature adults, and other kids tend to remain being kids. And, you know, there is the whole developmental thing. So I don't mean that it's all about Enneagram type, but a lot can be drawn from it.
Yes, and as a psychotherapist for many years, I can tell you that one of the most important things in parenting is what we call attunement. And that is being very present with your child and really tuning in to what their experience is and what they need from you. And again, it can be very challenging to be a person in this world right now, and even more challenging to be a parent. And I think if we look at it this way, it's about understanding yourself so that you know what your strengths and challenges are, understanding what your preferences are, what makes you mad, what makes you happy, and then knowing yourself enough to be able to almost move your own experience out of the way to make room for really seeing your child and really understanding them. And of course, the Enneagram gives individualized advice about what to do and how to relate to each different type of person. And so it gives you this great information with which to understand your child at a deeper level and understand what do they need from you and what are going to be some of the most important things to remember when you're relating to them that helps them feel supported and grow in the best ways.
Yeah, and then just two more concepts that may be useful. Father and mother will forever be a fundamental psychological source of strength in life. Family constellations system teaches us about that, as well as other lines in psychology, that unless we are really connected to our parents, we don't feel psychologically strong in life later on. And also, you know, kids need to be kids only. And by doing a good job with themselves, parents will allow for that to happen. But unfortunately, it's not what we see many, many times. Like some kids need to feel that they are small, but they don't. They think that they need to take care of their parents. And we do see patterns like social dominant kids on the Enneagram trying to be more the caretakers or the healers of the parents from very early stages. And I'm talking here about the instincts, the social being one of three instincts, and sometimes it's dominant for the kid.
I would just say that it's not only instinct that influences these kinds of things. I think it's also type. For instance, probably most of the twos that you talk to will say there was some pattern in their childhood where they took care of their parent. And sometimes I think other parents can do that. Sometimes, like you're saying, kids just grow up too fast in part because of their type, because there's this sense of taking on responsibility. Ones can be this way, certainly, some self-preservation fours. Sometimes it's about sort of making yourself small or not expressing yourself as much that can be the way that you adapt to your environment when you somehow need to take care of others to be okay. So I do think this is something that happens. And of course, there are a lot of different kinds of difficulties and traumas that children can experience. But I think the main thing is, like you're saying, if we create resilience in our children, if we are being self-aware and humble in who we are, We can also bring a lot to the table to work through and repair different difficulties when they do emerge, which they inevitably do among us humans. So let's talk about parents and children of the nine types. For each type, and we'll start with type 8, we will say a few things about what we think it might be good for people to know about how to relate to a child of that type. And also, if you're a parent of that type, what are some good things to be aware of? So let's start with 8. Why don't you start? What are some things that might be good to understand about type 8 children, and what should type 8 parents be aware of in themselves?
I think it's excellent that 8 kids are more uncomplicated. They, you know, what you see is what you get from them. Also, they have a very good potential for being responsible, do things, make efforts, be self-confident, resilient. But on the other hand, they can be very domineering, constantly irritated, and you know, a bit challenging when it comes to the parents putting limits and setting rules.
I think that type 8 children can be quite independent at an early age. And I think sometimes the parents may see that as good news, like, oh, good, they're taking care of themselves. But I think we need to remember that even when type 8 children look strong and they're doing things on their own, they're still kids and they need to be held. They need, and that means both physically and psychologically, they need a lot of support. Remember that there's vulnerability there, even if they're not showing it.
Yes, I agree with you, B. And what would be one idea of what to do with type 8 kids?
In terms of what to do, I would say allow them to feel a sense of power in their experience. Even though, of course, they're not in charge at an early age, allow them to have some power of choice in some of the things they do, so they don't kind of rebel against your power excessively, because you're giving them some chances to have some control over some aspect of their life. So what would be a don't for relating to type 8 kids?
Don't try to control your 8 kid. Allow the kid to be spontaneous as they are. Don't try to change them or to put too many limits, because it doesn't work.
And what are some things that type 8 parents should be aware of in themselves to be better parents?
It's difficult for 8 parents to express soft care and to share their own emotions and to just love in a softer way. And that is a challenge for them to pursue, at the same time that they also are in charge and put limits many times in a good and important way.
Yes, I think that type 8 parents benefit from getting in touch with their own vulnerability, so that they can empathize with the child's vulnerability, and also that they seek to understand more what their impact is on others, because sometimes 8s may think they're doing the right thing or having a positive impact, and they just may not remember to do that attunement part, to really sort of put aside their own viewpoint and really get into the experience of the child, which could be a vulnerable experience. And 8s sometimes just don't realize when they're not going there. So what about type 9? What are some things to know about how to relate to type 9 children?
It's amazing to see how type 9 children from the very beginning tend to show calmness, attention to other people's movements and needs, empathy somehow, and also very good sensory and instinctive intelligence. And by the way, they need more than average to do things so that they learn to be concrete. And this is for all body types, 8s, 9s, and 1s as kids already. And on the other hand, they have some tendencies that are very specific as kids, like giving their toys away for other kids, feeling less important than the siblings, and a few other things, including not crying much or not asking much for them.
Yeah, I think that type 9 children are adaptable, of course, as 9s tend to be. But, you know, in the parent-child relationship, there's, of course, a lot of situations in which the child needs to do something the parent wants them to do. And the parent needs to, you know, in some ways, find a way to get their child to comply. And that becomes an issue with type 9 children, because as we know, when 9s feel pressured into something, when they feel a sense that you're being an authoritarian and telling them what to do, there can be a natural kind of passive resistance that's not very direct. And so it can be hard to deal with. So what do you do when you need to get your child to do something, but you don't want to be too authoritarian because they'll resist you in different ways? And I think what we heard from our 9 panelists when we did our course was being honest and transparent about your motives, about what you want, and having more of a dialogue with them and showing that you care about what they think and what they want. So what's a do for parents who want to support their type 9 children in the best possible way? What would you suggest they do?
Just in the line of what you were talking about, do ask questions. Because 9s, including as kids, are the most sensitive when the parents are more imposing or authoritarian. And what would be a don't be?
This is a bit of a tricky one, but I would say don't assume that when your child disobeys you, that it's all a bad thing. Now, of course, there are certain times you need to get your child to do what you need them to do for their own good. But sometimes when 9s are resisting, when 9 children resist, it's almost like they're standing up for their sense of self. If they over-adapt and they do everything everyone wants them to do all the time, it's like they feel like they need to erase themselves, like they're not heard. And that's a big issue for 9s. So I would say listen to them, listen to both their behavior and what they say when they're resisting you, and seek to create a dialogue as opposed to just assuming that they don't want to do something because they are being disobedient or rebellious.
I really like what you've just said. But maybe now we can talk a bit about type 9 parents.
Yeah, so what would you say are some good things for type 9 parents to be aware of?
Yeah, I think they need to own that they are very dedicated. They listen well, just as true of many good things they have, because 9s don't always own what's good in them. And on the other hand, just see how hard it is for them to set limits, the opposite of type 8 parents. What about you?
Yeah, I think type 9 parents are really good at connecting with their children and creating a positive relationship and doing things together. I think they can, however, get into a situation where they may not know how to model conflict and decisiveness. Sometimes they can give their kids mixed messages if they're not strong and forceful enough, or if they're avoiding necessary conversations that may create tension. That can also give the child a sense of not really knowing how to deal with conflicts in their life. So shall we move on to type 1? How should we relate best to type 1 children? What are some of your thoughts about this?
So it's useful, in my view, when type 1 kids get help from their parents to have pleasure and fun. And sometimes being flexible in doing that before duty, like homework from school. Having some idle moments of laziness, and if they really train, you know, their imagination, creativity, and doing things like being dirty after playing, I think this is all very good for type 1 kids. But on the other hand, it's very good from them and very necessary that the parents provide this, that they have structure and routines. Otherwise, they just don't work. So in a way, it's good to have some control around what's happening and some self-control, but if they have that too much, as ones do, then it's a problem.
Yes, I think it's really important to notice if your child is being excessively self-critical, because one children just naturally do take things very seriously and they can be even more self-critical than they look. So I think it's supporting them in being kind to themselves, giving them a lot of positive feedback about the things they're doing well, giving them the message that there are many right ways to do things, and being very flexible in your approach and in how you deal with them.
And what would be a do for a parent of a type 1 kid?
I would say a do would be try to use a lot of humor when relating to your child, because I think sometimes that can be a way of delivering a message, but also making it soft or fun or not so serious. What about you? What's a don't? What should you avoid doing with your type 1 child?
So my don't is don't make the one kid leave in an environment that is not organized and is just, you know, has no routines, because that doesn't work.
I see. So one children need structure. So don't be too chaotic with what you're doing or the way that you relate to them.
Yeah. And at the same time, don't provide only structure.
Right. Break it up once in a while. Yeah. So what about tips for type 1 parents, how to understand themselves and their parenting style in a way that helps them and their children? What would you say to type 1 parents?
I think that type 1 parents can be very fun and humorous with the kids, because deep inside they are like that. But, you know, on the other hand, even fun can get structured. So there needs to be a negotiation and inside the type 1 parent, so that they also become a kid when playing with the kids.
My suggestion for type 1 parents would be to recognize the ways you may be hard on yourself. Children are so attuned to their parents and really use them as role models. And so the more you can be working on your own relaxation, your own, you know, bringing humor into things, not being so hard on yourself, you're going to model that for your children in different ways. And so to be really working on having a lot of compassion for yourself as a person generally, but also as a parent. I think sometimes type 1 parents put a lot of pressure on themselves to be the perfect parent, and it's just not possible for any of us to be perfect. So that's what I would say. So shall we move on to type 2?
Yes, now the hard triad, yeah. And you are a 2, so can you start this one? How is a type 2 kid be? How were you when you were a kid?
Well, I think very early on, I was very oriented toward pleasing people and doing whatever I felt they wanted me to do to be loved. Now, of course, sometimes I also rebelled against that, but I usually took that out on my brother. But I would say, in terms of relating to your type 2 child, the most important things to keep in mind would be making some space for their emotions and supporting their emotions, helping them accept their feelings and know what they're feeling, and not judge themselves for their feelings. I find that both in my experience and experience that I've had with other 2s, we often get messages that we're too sensitive or we're too emotional. And so what we do is we kind of comply and we say, okay, I'm just not going to be in touch with my emotions, because that doesn't work and to foster a good relationship. So be attuned to your child's emotions when you have a 2 child, and really give them positive messages about being emotional. What about you? What would you say about type 2 children?
Yeah, I really like all that you've just said. And I'd say help the type 2 kid be in touch with their own emotions, because usually from the very beginning, also, as you said, they are in touch with other people's emotions. And also, you know, they are very sensitive, respect that, but also help them have those moments when they're not only nice with others. You know, kids have the right to have those moments.
So is there a particular do that you would say in light of that?
Yes, I think the true kid needs the parent to give them a lot of care and love. So do be very emotional and caring and loving with your true kid. And what would be a don't be?
I would say don't get too critical without also really affirming and mirroring your true child. Mirroring, of course, is what all kids need, but especially heart type children. And we mirror our children when we really see them and really affirm what they're doing in a positive way. And two children need a lot of affirmation for who they really are, not for who they are when you want them to do something your way. So really seeing what's special about them and giving them messages about them instead of maybe just the negative stuff. That makes sense. And what about type two parents? What are some things for two parents to keep in mind when they're parenting?
Well, a few great things about type two parents. They tend to be really patient, caring, also dedicated, attentive, loving, and really concerned with being good parents in general. But some problems is that they try to be too good, like to be the best parent ever. And it would be good if they could be more human and just know that, you know, as people say, we learn who to be the best parents only when we are grandparents.
Yes, and I would say type two parents are going to be naturally loving and focus a lot of attention on their kids in a really good way. But I would say, remember that you also need to give your children space. I think sometimes we twos can forget that we need to have good boundaries with even the people we love the most and are closest to. So recognize when your child needs some private space. Recognize when it may be the time to not know everything about what they're doing with their friends, and to let them go a little bit and not feel like you need to be involved in everything they're doing or thinking. So shall we talk about type three? What are some things to know about how to relate to a type three child?
Yeah, type three kids are very dynamic from early on, and they're really emotional in my experience. On the other hand, really value performance at first and become competitive and sometimes push away emotions. But still, at least during early childhood, they tend to be very emotional, sensitive, and they need a lot of love and care. But it's also important when parents help them stop a little. And giving them love and care helps with that. They stop when, you know, emotions are being expressed and exchanged. So don't do that only with words. Do it with gestures and express emotions with type 3 kids. What would you add?
I would say it might be nice as a parent of a 3 child to see how industrious they are and how much they do from a young age. They tend to be very self-motivated and wanting to accomplish a lot and be very active, as you say. But I do think that it can be a little bit of a trap because parents can unknowingly affirm their child for what they do and reinforce the type 3 fixation of I'm valued for what I accomplish and what I do and for being good at things, not for who I essentially am. So when we relate to type 3 kids, I think it's important, as you say, to support their emotions and also to mirror back who you see them as in terms of who they uniquely are. So not always giving them positive feedback about what they do or what they accomplish, but their effort they make or the thoughtfulness that they express or things that are less tangible and more things that you really see that are about who they are at a deeper level.
So what would be a do be for you, in your view, for a parent of a type 3 kid?
I would say do things with your child and ask them about their experience of things when you do things with them. So how are they feeling about it? Are they having fun? What are they interested in? What do they find meaningful? What was their favorite part? I think if you inquire into their experience, you can help them come to know themselves in a good way. What about you? What's a don't? What would you say to not do with your 3 child?
I would say don't be absent in an important moment of the type 3 kid, like in that final sports competition or when there is the theater play at school. We see many times that type 3 kids are really, really wounded by the experience of their parents not being there to look at them at those moments.
Right. They need to be recognized in these sort of moments of success or victory. That's a good one. So what about type 3 parents? What are some things for type 3 parents to remember, to be aware of in themselves?
I think they model the importance of hard work, commitment, and they help their kids thrive and make efforts. But on the other hand, they might stimulate too much competition on the kid and care too much about their images, sometimes with things like dressing them up. And what about you?
I think it's important for type 3 parents to be aware of what I might call work-life balance or work-relationship balance. I think sometimes because threes are so good at doing the things they do, their work life tends to get a lot of their attention and their energy. And so to just always remember to also leave space for relating to people, for nourishing your relationship with your child, and of course, modeling, having a good balance between focusing on doing things in the world and being with the people around you in a very present and connected way. Let's do a short break.
The Enneagram 2.0 podcast goes live every other Thursday on all main platforms. Stay tuned to learn more about yourself and others.
B and Yiranyu offer much, much more high-quality Enneagram content on www.cpenneagram.com. If you are an Enneagram enthusiast, visit the website now.
Hi, Yiranyu here. If you are liking this podcast, you will most probably also like our online workshop on Enneagram and parenting. It had 9 classes, hour and a half each, talking about the 9 kinds of kids and how to best deal with them, and also the 9 kinds of parents and what they can do to be better parents. Check it out at cpenneagram.com and use the code PODFAMILY for 25% off the price.
So shall we move on to type 4? What are some things that might be important for people to know about type 4 children?
So it's really interesting to see how 4 kids try to be different and unique from early ages. But of course, because they are closer to essence or the higher self in them, they sometimes are much less emotional than an adult 4. Now, at times you will see a lot of intensity and emotions, and this will grow as they get older. So don't try to box in your 4 kid. Allow them to be expressive or even a bit, good crazy instead, because they need to channel their emotions in a way that's not harmful for them or for others. And it's very important then that they have things like arts, writing, practicing sports for discharging, and even, you know, cheering for singers and bands or sports teams. That helps. What would you say?
I would say that it is important to support their natural tendency to be emotional. Again, like twos, I think fours can get some negative messages from early on about being too emotional. And so I think it's important to have a positive, supportive attitude about emotions generally, and to support the four in authentically expressing themselves. I also think that type fours tend to be truth tellers. So if your child is bringing an inconvenient truth to your attention, pause and really allow yourself to appreciate this actual quality of being really honest and authentic. And similarly, watch out for labeling four children in any ways as too dramatic or too this or too that, because I think that sometimes happens with fours, because I think in our culture, sometimes we are a little bit afraid of our own emotions or our own intensity. And sometimes we put that on fours in a way we don't intend to. So be very careful about valuing fours as they are, especially when they express themselves. And try really hard to be mindful about not sending any negative messages. So when it comes to four children, what would you suggest people do?
Do listen to your type four kid to the end, because they need to say how they are feeling. And what would be a don't be?
Well, this is very much related to what you're saying. I would say don't think you understand them when you're actually not understanding them. Fours need a lot of understanding. So I would say don't misunderstand them. Really take time to understand them, and don't give them any negative messages about themselves when you maybe don't fully understand them. So what about type four parents? What would be good for them to be aware of in their parenting?
Type four parents brilliantly model to their kids how to be emotionally intelligent. And they have this positive, many times positive, intensity and creativity. And they can play and have fun quite well with their kids. Now, on the other hand, they can be self-referencing, making things more about them than about the kids. That's concerning. And this is why it's so important to do inner work for all of us, actually. And what about you? What would you say about type four parents?
Well, I think type four parents are very good at really connecting with their children and really wanting to connect with their children and really knowing what that means and what it takes to really truly connect. I think some types think they're connecting and they may not really be fully understanding the other person or available for that, a deeper connection. And I think fours really are. And I also think that they teach their children a lot about what it means to be emotional and how to manage emotions. So I would very much agree with what you said about being emotionally intelligent. But I do think that fours also need to recognize when they may be modeling not managing their emotions very well. I think sometimes fours can over-identify with their emotions and not let things go at a certain point after they've felt the emotion. Sometimes it's good to move on, and fours can sort of get too attached to a particular feeling or an emotional experience. And so it's important for four parents to recognize that their children are really watching them and learning how to manage their feelings. And so to be also modeling how to let go, how to rise above and get yourself back to a calm place if something's been upsetting, for instance. So shall we talk about fives, your type?
Yeah, okay, why not?
So why don't you start, since this is your type, and tell us a little bit about what it's important to understand about type five children. I think a lot of people will be interested to know this, because maybe sometimes type five children don't tell us as much what we need to understand.
Yeah, but on the other hand, they love to be asked about what they want, what they need, and who they are. And they, when people are interested, it's great, you know, and when they don't just assume who they are, like the type 5 kid is. So when they are very, very young, young kids, they tend to be very energized because we are closer to our best on those times. But then they, of course, develop those type five tendencies and want parents to give them more space, and they can be very calm and behave, and also, you know, be very discreet, not very communicative, and be very mental, not as much in touch with the body and emotions. But what do you see as tendencies for type 5 kids be?
Well, I think sometimes parents get worried about their type 5 children if they're quieter than most kids, or they don't have as many friends, they're not as social, or they're really okay being by themselves for long periods of time. I think sometimes, you know, parents are always wondering, is my child okay? And they can think that's not okay. And so one thing is to recognize that your type 5 child may actually appreciate having time and space to themselves. And it's important not to think they're something wrong if they don't want to socialize at the same level that other people do. And so to leave a lot of room for that. And like you said, too, I think it's also important to ask them what's going on with them and to give them some choices about what's happening and give them time to think about the questions you ask and the choices if they don't have an answer in the moment. So what's one do for what to do with your 5 child? Well, I would suggest do help them understand what's happening. 5s often say they need things to make sense. They need to know what's happening before it happens. They need to be able to wrap their minds around it to feel okay about what's happening. So don't surprise them, but do give them information about what's going to happen. Give them information that's mental so they can make sense of things and feel more secure. What about you? What's a don't? What should people not do with their type 5 child?
First, I can confirm that what you said is really useful. I've always needed that as even a kid. And, you know, type 5 kids are the ones always asking why. And when you answer, everything works better for them. Now, my don't is don't try to control their time too much. Allow them to have some control of the time in things like when they want to do homework or when they think they will be ready to come back to you in something you said. So don't give them all the time, but don't try to control their time too much.
So now let's talk about the type 5 parent. What are some important things to know? Since you yourself are a type 5 parent, I really want to hear what you have to say. What do you think should people know about type 5s as parents?
I think they are usually very perceptive. They observe what's going on with the kid and they see the kid for who they are. And they stimulate the intellect. But while they can engage in playing quite a bit, they are always controlling time and, you know, defining themselves when the play will finish, which is not very pleasant for the kid. What would you add?
I would say that 5s can be great parents because they're objective and calm. And I think they're good at solving problems that come up in a direct and way without getting too upset, which is something that children need. They need to have a sense of security that things are going to be okay. And I think 5s don't bring their own emotions into things in a way that doesn't help the situation. But I also think they need to remember to stay engaged. They need to remember to flex a little bit, that they may need to be flexible around the time they would rather have to themselves. They may need to be with their kids more than is comfortable being around people some of the time. So let's move on to type 6. So what's important for people to know about type 6 children?
Type 6 children start doubting themselves at a certain point of their childhood. And they need a reassurance. They need a word of help. They need backup. At earlier ages, type 6 kids can show the other side of sixes in touch with courage, which is being really strong and being really there for whatever happens. So when they start losing that, it's when the parents need to show strength. Now, on the other hand, the parents shouldn't show, you know, that they are in charge of everything always, because they need to give back to the kid responsibility for things that happen. And it's very important to help the type 6 kid relax in things like exams, or when there are problems with other kids. And relaxation is essential. Relaxation techniques and activities. What would you add, B?
I would say that really one of the main issues that you may need to be understanding around with your type 6 child is their need to learn to cope with fear. Now, the three different subtypes of 6 experience fear and cope with it very differently, but to be tuned into your child's fear level, what they're doing in light of it, and really support them both around the idea that being afraid is okay, it's natural, it makes sense, but also helping them find ways to deal with their fear when it does come up. So what would you say is one do for parents to do with their type 6 kids?
It's pushing them into action sooner and help them see how they succeed. Because chances are that the result will be better than they are anticipating. And what would be a don't?
I would say that, you know, most sixes have some sort of authority issues. And guess what? The authority issues start with the first authorities, which are the parents. So I would say don't be too authoritarian with your child, and be very mindful of how you're exercising your power and authority, because you don't want to neglect the child's need to develop their own inner sense of power and authority. So don't be too authoritarian. Don't be too unaware of the power dynamics in your relationship. So what about type 6 parents? What are some insights or thoughts about type 6 parents?
My wife is a type 6, and I really admire how she's always on top of things, and she can, on one hand, see the big picture that is happening with the kid, and on the other hand, help in details in ways that I can't. Now, I see that many type 6 parents can also be way too stressed with the parenting role and thinking that everything depends on them, which is dangerous. What about you? What would you add?
Yes, I think being mindful of their role as authority, as I said, and I think learning to manage their own fear and modeling good ways of coping with fear are all important things for type sixes to remember. I think they tend to be very steadfast and devoted to the people in their lives, and I think those are great things. And I think if they are also really speaking about maybe how they deal with their own fear, to be a really clear model for being strong and being self-confident, I think that's also a very important thing. So let's talk about type 7, our last type. So type 7, what are some important things for people to know about type 7 children?
Type 7 children are very creative, and in the beginning, they are also very concentrated, but they lose that at a certain point, and they start avoiding pain and suffering without telling you many times that they are suffering. So they need a lot of sensitivity from the parents to see what's going on inside them, because chances are that they won't share very easily. And as kids, they really know how to play, how to have fun. But sometimes they don't know very much how, when to end having fun and going for duty. It's very common that 7 kids have problems with some responsibilities in life because they are really more driven by pleasure than any other thing. And one thing that I think helps type 7 kids is to have some of the rewarding nice moments after they have done their duties. And they will insist that this doesn't happen. But this is a true effective way for 7 kids to discipline themselves a bit more. What would you say, in addition to this, about 7 kids?
Well, I would say that 7 kids are going to be sensitive to having their freedom limited. They're also going to be sensitive to authoritarian situations like 6s. However, they react very differently. Instead of being openly rebellious, well, as children, they may be more rebellious, but 7s tend to have authority issues, but instead of being more open and direct about how they respond, they can respond through being charming or fun or deflecting through humor. And so limits may be an issue. Making boundaries, setting consequences may be things with children, and you may need to be very mindful about the way in which you do that with your 7 child so that you allow them freedom and stay positive, but also help them learn to be more self-disciplined, which can be hard for them. So I think it's my turn to do a do for type 7. So I would say, do be very supportive around their emotions. Like you said, it can be hard for 7s to learn that it's okay to feel pain. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to be afraid, because they can fear that if they go there, it won't stop or it will be overwhelming. And so I think really do tune into what your child needs around learning to be with difficult experiences or negative experiences, because that can be hard for 7s to learn how to know how to cope with. What about you? What would you say is a don't for type 7? What would you avoid doing?
Don't take away their options. Type 7 kids will always want to know that there are more than just one way to go or one alternative, one thing to do. So let them have that flexibility.
That's great. Now, what about type 7 parents? What do you think are some important things for type 7 parents to be aware of?
I think they are usually seen as great parents, unless they are too much out there in the world just for themselves, and unless they are too self-referencing, which are two risks. But usually they are very fun, light, and kids love the fact that they negotiate and they, you know, allow them to have fun and understand their need for flexibility. What do you think is great for type 7 parents, and perhaps also not so great?
I would say it's important for 7 parents to balance, to find balance in the things they do, to balance, say, being positive with also being serious, to balance being fun with also helping your child do their homework when they need to, being practical with also being creative and fun, and thinking outside the box. And so I think if 7 parents can be mindful of striking a balance, then I think that's a good way for kids to see that it's great to be fun and positive and go for pleasure, but there are also these other sides of life that have to be addressed as well. So now it's time for our top 5.
Top 5. What is our top 5 today, Bea?
Well, we're doing our top five on the top five most playful types.
Makes sense, given what we talked about here at this podcast.
Exactly. What types have the most easy time kind of getting on the floor and playing with their kids? We might want to think about it that way.
Yeah, I love that. So what is your fifth?
So my fifth is self-preservation six. I thought about this because self-preservation sixes, even though of course they can be anxious, I also find that they're often quite funny, and sometimes you see their playfulness in their humor.
Yeah, I can get that, yes.
What's your number five?
My fifth is force. I didn't say specific subtypes. I see that although force sometimes go a bit more to sadness, which is, as I said, a bit more, not a lot more. I think they are all about all kinds of emotions and intense and playful as a consequence. And I see many fours who are great with kids. And I also must say, I see fours who are not that great with kids. But yeah, I think they're pretty good. So they are my fifth. What is your fourth?
So my fourth is fours. Similar to you, I see fours as sometimes being very serious, but other times being capable of being very playful, in part because, like you said, they're in touch with their emotions. Sometimes there's a polarity between being deep, but also being light. And I see fours, as you do, as being capable of being quite playful. What's your four?
Interesting, because my fourth is sixes, especially self-pressed sixes. So we inverted the two, but we think similarly, it looks like. And yeah, I think that self-pressed sixes in special are good in being playful, because they are warm and nice and fun and sort of light, right? So I don't think that social sixes are among the best in terms of being playful, because they are too dutiful. And I see social sixes sometimes becoming premature adults as kids. But I don't see that happening with self-pressed sixes, and also not as much with sexual sixes, as I must say. I think that many sexual sixes sort of put their guards down when they are with kids. They don't try to be just strong and so on. There are cases and cases, but so sixes, but especially self-pressed sixes is my fourth. What is your third?
My third is nines. Probably usually self-preservation and social the most, but nines are my number three. I was thinking about people I know, and a lot of nines I know are also very funny, and they can be humorous and light, and they're also really oriented toward connecting with people. And if it's a child or someone else that's playful, oftentimes they can be right there and show that side of themselves quite easily. What's your number three?
It's interesting, before I say my number three, I haven't included nines among my five, and I thought about that a lot, but I haven't. Maybe I'm biased because my mother is a self-preservation nine and not playful at all. She didn't play with me much. and other nines I know are also not that playful, especially with their kids, but I might be biased. So my third is eights. I think that eights are very often playful. Eights truly open up their hearts when they are in front of kids. I mean, it's as if kids inspire them to be more innocent, and innocence is the virtue of eights. And eights become much more playful, and they put their guards down. I also see an interesting thing, Dee. I know a few aides who are doctors, medical doctors, and they really go at times for pediatrician and things that deal with kids, because they feel really inspired by kids in a way. And AIDS have that intensity to them and some happiness, and, you know, for most of them. So AIDS is my third.
So I just want to say I really liked the way you owned your bias, because it got me thinking that, of course, when we do these top fives, we think about all the people that we know as examples. And of course, that's, you know, probably not representative of the full population of these types. However, I do think that you and I by now probably know a lot of people of different numbers, but I didn't have eights in my top five. And I think part of it is because I don't know that many eights generally who I've known for a long time. And when we're talking about nines, one of my best friends is a self-preservation nine, and I've actually known her since I was 3 years old. And I've seen her be very playful with her daughter. So again, I think it's part of what comes into our head when we're doing these things. And so I just appreciated that you named your bias, and I wanted to name mine as well. In terms of my number two, I put self-preservation twos.
Thank you.
And even though I don't think of myself as the most playful person in the world, like, it's funny, I love kids, but I don't love all kids. Like, I'm, you know, maybe it's being a selective two, but they're, you know, some people are a sucker for kids. Like, any kid walks by and they want to get on the ground and play with them. And I wouldn't say I'm that way, but I do really connect with some kids. And I think that self-preservation too, because we stay a bit childlike ourselves, can be more playful. And I'm thinking of, in specific, a client I had once, a psychotherapy client, who was very funny and just had a real playful side to her. And that's one of the things I kind of appreciated the most about her. And I think that, again, it's this childlike quality that self-preservation twos have. It's the part of us that can be a bit hedonistic and likes to have fun and doesn't want to do something if it's not fun. So number two was self-preservation two, my own type. What about you?
Do you think that self-pres twos are the funniest of all twos, B?
Yeah, when it comes to funny, I think they're probably pretty clearly the funniest too. I was thinking about my sister-in-law when I thought about this, and she's a social too. And I would say she's also very playful, like maybe even more playful than me, but I think she's probably more the exception than the rule. But I do think social twos can be very serious and very adult. But also, of course, I'm sure there are a lot of social twos that are more fun.
Yeah. So my second is also twos. And I, you know, it's really the same thinking that you explained us. And I do think that self-press twos are the most playful subtype of twos. So I don't have much to add why, because you said it all. I just want to say that I was in a doubt if I would put twos in second or in first place. My first place is sevens, and especially sexual sevens, I'd say. Although all sevens tend to be really playful and nice with kids, I think they feel inspired, and it's easy in general for sevens to be in touch with the kid in themselves, and that's who's the one playing with the kids actually. Sometimes there are sevens that we see that are like Peter Pan, like they don't want to grow up and they are eternal kids, but they don't need to be like that to be playful. I just think they are my number one, but by a close margin for twos. What is your first?
So my first is seven, the same as you. And for many of the same reasons, I think sevens really, they're usually very much in contact with the playful, childlike part of themselves. It's part of wanting to have fun and being imaginative and wanting to bring lightness to the things that they do. So I agree with you that sevens are also my number one.
Great. We agreed a lot on this top five.
Yes, that's very interesting. Okay, so thank you for that, and thank you for listening. Join us again for our Enneagram 2.0 podcast, where we talk about all things Enneagram.
Please click on like to help spread the word about our podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, Enneagram 2.0, find your personality. Chestnut Pies, Enneagram Academy. What's your type? What's your subtype? So much you can learn. You can be amazing. Go ahead and transform. It's for yourself and others. Grow and follow the flow. And also for the planet. Yeah, let your mind blow. It's from B and Yoranyo. Time for you to know and be your best self with Enneagram 2.0. Psychology, self-mastery, work in relationships, spirituality. Come and join the podcast. Oh yeah, we'll be fun. Explore the challenges that from now you'll overcome. Hey, Enneagram 2.0. Tune in, yeah, it's your personality. Enneagram 2.0. Chestnut Pies, Enneagram Academy. Hey, Enneagram 2.0. Tune in now.